Good afternoon. Good to see you. I'm glad that you're here. We've got maybe a couple of visitors with us tonight, and it's good to see you, and I'm glad you're here with us as well. Tonight, I want to look at a text we find in Genesis chapter 4. If you want to go ahead and turn there, we're going to spend some time there tonight. Looking at the legacy of Cain and Abel. And when you think about legacy and what kind of legacy we're leaving behind, you know, all of us probably have some desire to leave some kind of legacy for others who know us, others who will remember us. We want to leave some kind of good legacy behind. You think a mom may want to leave a legacy of love for her children, and you know, she wants her children to know how much she loved them and sacrificed for them. You know, a father wants to know that wants his children to know that he loved them, that he was there to protect them, to guide them, to provide for them. You know, if you're in a particular area of service in your career, you know, like Asai is a fireman. I'm sure part of his legacy is he wants to be remembered as a great firefighter, someone who was willing to sacrifice for the good of others, who was willing to do the things that other people wouldn't do. You think about, you know, all of us have things in our lives that we want to be remembered for, things we would like to be remembered for. We think about some of the people in our country. Think about Abraham Lincoln, and he is remembered as the great emancipator, you know, and he freed, was at least a part of the freedom of millions of slaves, and that's a wonderful legacy. You think about George Washington, you know, our first president known, we remember him as the father of our nation, one of the fathers of our nation. You think about, you know, people like that, and then we have some legacies we don't think fondly of, and you know, you think about Adolf Hitler and the legacy he left. You know, that's not a legacy most people want to leave, a legacy of death and destruction, of hatred, of racism and bigotry. You think about other people. You think about Jezebel and how that name remains today as someone of hate and idolatry. Legacy is not something necessarily that we just desire, in other words. You know, we'd all like to have a great legacy left behind. You know, I'd love to be remembered like Paul or Peter. But that's not the way legacies work, is it? Legacies are earned. The way our children remember us will be based on how we lived our lives, you know. What kind of parent were we? Our co-workers, our friends, those who look back on us from our church family. You know, they're going to remember as time goes, they're going to remember the person they knew, not the person I hope to be, but the person I actually was. And so you look at Hebrews chapter 11, and you think about this idea of legacy, and you've got two men there in Genesis 4. You've got Cain, the older brother, and Abel, the younger, the first offspring of the first two people. And there they are, and you think about their contrasting legacies. Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 4, the Hebrews writer is talking about faith, of course, and he's going to spend the whole chapter talking about what it means to be a person of faith, of trust, believing in God. And he says, by faith, Abel offered to God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain. Why? Through which he obtained witness that he was righteous, God testifying of his gifts. Through it, notice this, he being dead still speaks. What's Hebrew writer talking about? He's talking about the legacy that Abel left behind. You know, both men that were there left a legacy. Both men are remembered equally. Both men speak still this day. At least their examples do. And so tonight, I want to spend some time there thinking about this idea of legacy. So go to Genesis chapter 4, and I just want to read the text here. Genesis 4, I know it's a little bit lengthy of a text, but if you'll read with me, I think it'll contextualize our thoughts for tonight. But verse 1 of Genesis 4, "Now Adam knew Eve, his wife, and she conceived and bore Cain, and said, I have acquired a man from the Lord. Then she bore again, this time his brother Abel. Now Abel was a keeper of sheep, but Cain was a tiller of the ground. And in the process of time, it came to pass that Cain brought an offering of the fruits of the ground to the Lord. Abel also brought of the firstborn of his flock and of their fat. And the Lord respected Abel and his offering. But he did not respect Cain and his offering. And Cain was very angry, and his countenance fell. And the Lord said to Cain, Why are you angry, and why has your countenance fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin lies at the door. And its desire is for you, but you should rule over it. Now Cain talked with Abel his brother, and it came to pass when they were in the field that Cain rose up against Abel his brother and killed him. Then the Lord said to Cain, Where is Abel your brother? He said, I do not know. Am I my brother's keeper? And he said, What have you done? The voice of your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground. So now you are cursed from the earth, which has opened its mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hand. When you till the ground, it shall no longer yield its strength to you. A fugitive and a vagabond you shall be on the earth. And Cain said to the Lord, My punishment is greater than I can bear. Surely you've driven me out this day from the face of the ground. I shall be hidden from your face. I shall be a fugitive and a vagabond on the earth. And it will happen that anyone who finds me will kill me. And the Lord said to him, Therefore, whoever kills Cain, vengeance shall be taken on him sevenfold. And the Lord set a mark on Cain, lest anyone finding him should kill him. Now I want to go back and I want to think about what's going on here. I want to note a few things about the context here. Number one, you've got Adam and Eve. Now, we don't know how long it's been since they've come out of the garden. Okay, so you've got the transition from 3, when they leave the garden, until 4. We don't know a specific time. But we do know from the context, at least it appears to be, that Cain is their first child. Now notice what Eve says about Cain. She says, I have acquired a man from the Lord. That sounds like an excited mom does to me. She's excited. She's the first one, by the way, on earth. I would have been in a fight if you'd had more people. You'd had a party. She's excited. I've acquired a man from the Lord. And then she goes on to give birth to Abel. And what we note about the two men, they're different. Any two sons are. Abel is a keeper of sheep. He's a sheep herder. And whereas Cain is a tiller of the ground. Now, we know from chapter 3, we already know that God has promised man now that he will till the ground by the sweat of his brow. So being a farmer has become a much harder job outside the garden. And that's the life that Cain is living. Now, it's even going to get tougher for him as a punishment on him later in this context. Did you note that when we read it? He said, you'll be cursed by the ground you till, right? So you've got these two young men. And then again in verse 3, we've got a time jump. And we don't know how long. But one thing we can probably realize from the context here, I hope I'm not going too far, but at this point, Adam and Eve had other children. Now, how do we know that? Notice what Cain says at the very end. He says, I'm going to be known and people are going to kill me because of what I've done. Now, for him to make that statement means he's got other siblings out there. And he's concerned about his own life. I wish he'd had that kind of concern about Abel's life. But in the process of time, verse 3, they come and they give these two sacrifices. And what the context notes here is the first sacrifice is from Cain. Now, we're not told if God instructed this or if this was just a free sacrifice offering from him or not. But he comes and he offers a sacrifice. Well, at the same time, Abel, maybe seeing the example of Cain, gives an offering as well. But we note a difference, don't we, in their offering. And we're going to talk about that in just a few minutes. But God accepts Abel's sacrifice and not Cain's. Now, Cain's the older brother. You ever think about dynamics in children and how older children and younger children act differently and see themselves a little differently because of their birth order? Now, I don't know what's going through Cain's mind at this point. He's the older brother. And maybe he feels like, well, mine should have been accepted. I'm the older brother. But he wasn't. You notice what God says to Cain. Cain's very upset. And this is a key thought. In verse 7, he says, if you do well, will you not be accepted? And that's really the key thought for this whole thing. If you do well, will you not be accepted? The answer, of course, to that is yes. If Cain had came back and offered a better sacrifice, God would have accepted it. But he chose not to do that. He chose to do something else. So tonight, I want to spend just a few moments thinking about what's going on here. Why was Abel's sacrifice accepted when Cain's was not? What's the difference here? What's really going on? And a couple of reasons I believe Abel offered the better sacrifice. He offered the more acceptable sacrifice. Number one, you notice something about Abel's sacrifice that it came from, as Genesis 4:3 tells us there and following, and verse 4 it actually says, Abel brought of his first fruits. Now, it doesn't note that about Cain. Now, what does it mean to be first fruits? Well, it's kind of literal. You know, first fruits, that's the first of the fruit, the best of the fruit. Looking all of his sheep, he selected the very best one he could, and he brought that sheep. Now, what's significant about that is the better sheep, the more healthy sheep, the sheep that are in better health are of more value. And yet Abel brought that sheep, and he sacrificed it to God. Well, it says a lot about his relationship with God, doesn't it? He's actually doing some real sacrificing. Now, on Cain's part, we don't know exactly the process of how he selected what he offered. And we don't even know for sure if God hadn't asked for an animal sacrifice and he gave, you know, of his crops. But the text doesn't tell us one way or the other. But he didn't give first fruits. Either way. And because of that, God accepted Abel's sacrifice. Paul writes something about this in regard to us. And I want to think about, well, are we giving God our best fruits? Are we giving him our first fruits? Or are we more like Cain and are we giving him our leftovers? You know, Paul writes to the Corinthian church in 2 Corinthians 9, 6 and 7. He says, "But this I say, he who sows sparingly will also reap sparingly. He who sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. So let each one give as he purposes in his heart, not grudgingly or of necessity." It's a key phrase there. "For God loves a cheerful giver." Now, he's using this illustration of a farmer. Now, anyone who has a garden, one of the things you realize is you're going to get more crops from more seeds. It just follows naturally. If I'm putting more out there, I have a much greater chance of getting more. But if I'm only planting a few seeds, it's likely they're not all coming up. Now, this year, we tried to sow in our garden, and Lisa put a bunch of seeds out there, and we had a good return, so much that she had to come back and weed some of them out so she'd get some space between them. How you sow in your life, what you'll reap back. And he makes this application to what we give to God. Now, I know there's a direct application to financially, and that's definitely true, but there is a holistic ideal here too. You know, what am I giving to God? Am I giving him all that I have? Have I ever really been sacrificial in my giving? And that might be financially. You ever given until it kind of hurt a little bit? You're a little concerned. I know you got this, God, but whew, we're stepping out here maybe next month. You know, if you don't help me out, I'm going to be in trouble. It's hard to give like that, isn't there? Because you're kind of standing out there, and when we don't know the future. And that's hard to give that way. But you notice that last phrase, it really does come down to how we give. It's our attitude of giving. And that's this way with our finances. If I am having to struggle to get that check out of my wallet, or I'm struggling to write that amount on my check, just don't write it for that amount. Because you know, in the end, if I'm trying to hold back, God isn't going to be too happy with that. Now, I'm not saying sacrificing can hurt a little bit, and I have to take my time. I'm going to count and make sure, you know, I still feed my family. But what kind of attitude? Am I giving because I feel like I have to? Or am I giving because of all the blessings God's given to me? God loves a cheerful giver. And think about your time and what effort it takes to get to church on Sunday morning or Sunday evening or Wednesday. You know, what kind of attitude do I bring in the door? Or if I want to go to a VBS, you know, and I have to spend all day with a bunch of rowdy kids running around and I'm chasing after them and I'm trying to help them out. Now, that's tiring, isn't it? It's tiring just thinking about it. What kind of attitude do I bring to stuff like that? What about a gospel meeting? You know, how hard is it for us to get here on a Tuesday night or a Monday night? I know I did those in reverse order. I mean, how hard is that on us? Man, I sure would like to be home. I mean, Tuesday night, you know, I need to be home. I got things to take care of. What kind of attitude do I walk in the door with? You know, in Revelation chapter 3, Jesus, through the Apostle John, says to the Laodiceans, you know, you guys, you're not hot or cold. You're lukewarm. it's like that lukewarm water. You know, you've left your water sit outside. You ever do this on a hot day and you're outside working and somebody kindly brings you a water and you drink it and you set it down and you go back to work and you don't come back for a little while and that water is now, that temperature started to raise in that bottle. I can get it down, but it's not always fun. Or you've done the hose outside. I bet you have as a kid. And that hose is laid across the ground, and you go over there, and you're the first one to get it out. And that first little bit isn't so good. You want it to get up out of, let me get into the pipes and get out of the hose water, you know. And that's the image that Jesus uses there. He says, I'm just going to spit you out because you're disgusting. I'd rather you be cold and to be this lukewarm, have this awful attitude that your heart's really not in it. Are we lukewarm? You know, the old saying, the ends justify the means, is really not true. It's not. You putting money in a plate or you showing up to worship, God wants more. And he deserves more. I'm glad you're here. And some days I've been there. It's a little tougher than others. But God really does deserve more. You know, in Matthew 15, Jesus says to the Pharisees who had this outward religion, but inward really weren't as religious or spiritually minded as they like people to think. He calls them hypocrites. And he says, well, Isaiah prophesied about you, saying, these people draw near to me with their mouths. They say all the right things. And honor me with their lips. They say the right words. But their heart is far from me. In vain they worship me, teaching as doctrine the commandments of men. That idea of vain, useless, empty, what they're providing is really not anything to God. We're reminded of a great example of sacrifice in Mark chapter 12. Mark chapter 12, verse 33. And to love him with all the heart, with all understanding, with all the soul, with all the strength, and to love one's neighbors as oneself is more than all the whole burnt offerings and sacrifices. All those ritualistic things that the Jews did, all those things that they did because that's what they had to do, became empty. Why? Because they quit loving God with all their heart, with all their understanding, with all their soul, with all their strength. They quit loving their neighbor. And because of that, their religion became vain. Hosea the prophet says in Hosea 6, verse 6, for I desire mercy and not sacrifice, and the knowledge of God more than burnt offering. Yeah. Again, it's that heart issue, the desire for mercy. Mercy and not sacrifice. Proverbs writer says, Proverbs 21, verse 3, to do righteousness and justice is more acceptable to the Lord than sacrifice. God just didn't want the Israelites just to offer things just because, but to give God their best. And that was not what they always did, nor is it always what we do. Another reason Abel's sacrifice was better, because it was an offering of sacrifice, while Cain gave an offering of self-service. Notice there again in Genesis 4, he brought of his firstborn, the best of his flock, and it really was to him a sacrifice. In writing about Cain, Jude, verses 5 through 11, is talking about those who are evil, those who destroy. And he gives all these examples. And in amongst the, he gets to verse 11 of Jude, chapter 1 is really only one chapter, but Jude 11, he says, "Woe to them, for they have gone in the way of Cain." How? "Have run greedily in error of Balaam for profit and perished in the rebellion of Korah." You know how he relates all three of those things together? What was Cain's great trapping? What was it that where was it he fell short? Well, it was in the fact that what he did was not about God, but it was really about Cain and about what Cain would get out of it. When God told Cain, "If you do well, will you not be accepted?" If Cain had done what God had asked him to do, if it had really been about serving God, what would Cain have done? He would have brought that second offering. He said, "I didn't do well the first time. Here's my real first fruit offering." He didn't do that. It became about him. His countenance fell because he was not honored like Abel. You know, think about our sacrifices and about what we're seeking. What are we seeking from God? What are we seeking from others? What are we seeking from the church in our service? In Mark chapter 12, you've got Jesus there sitting in the temple, and he's watching the treasury and how people would come and put money in there. And he's watching all these people who are wealthy coming in, and they're giving these great sums. And then, of course, many of us know this event where this widow who has very little comes and puts one tiny mite, or two mites, I'm sorry, two mites into the treasury. Very minuscule amount of money. Now, you'd think Jesus watching all that, most of us would look and say, "Wow, look at all the great money that's been given to the treasury. Isn't this a great thing? You see all these people who are giving to God." Do you notice what he says about this woman's sacrifice, this woman's giving? He says, "So he called his disciples to himself and said to them," verse 43, Mark 12, "Assuredly I say to you that this poor widow has put more than all those who have given to the treasury. For they all put in out of their abundance, but she, out of her poverty, put in all that she had, her whole livelihood." It's amazing. You think about the great sums of money that were put in that day, and Jesus points out this one woman and how hers stood out to him above all the others. Now, by the way, this is God. This is God's house. This is God's money. This is God watching. So he should have the perspective on it, shouldn't he? Of all the perspectives that could be made about the giving of an individual, it should come from this man. Because he has more insight and more understanding than we'll ever have. And yet he points to this one woman. And he says, she's given more than any of the others. And why? Because what she did in giving up those two mites was giving up any security she had for food, for clothing, for anything else. She put it all on the line. All in the hope and trust that God would provide for her the next day or even that day. That God would take care of her. I mean, how many of us would be willing to just write the check for the total sum? That'd be a hard check to write, wouldn't it? And yet here's this widow woman. She knew the jingle of her purse. We don't carry around as much money as we used to. I remember as a kid, getting a quarter was exciting. Now I know sometimes seeing a quarter on the street, we walk right over and keep going. The view of money has changed, hasn't it? But she knew the jingle of her purse, and yet she reached down and put it in. Now, can you imagine her walking out? That same clang that she heard before wasn't there anymore. And at that point, she was really stepping out on faith. What if God doesn't come through for her? What if God doesn't provide for her family? What other avenue does she have? That's how much she trusted God. It's a challenge to us, is it not? How much do we have that kind of trust ourselves? When Jesus meets that rich man, and we have a real comparison about two individuals here. This rich young man who has all this wealth, who's doing all kinds of good things, keeping the commandments. And yet Jesus says, one thing you lack. You lack what that widow had. You've come up short in this seemingly small area of life, but is really important. Cain gave an offering of sacrifice. Abel. Abel gave an offering of sacrifice, while Cain did not. And then thirdly and finally, Abel's offering was an offering of gratitude, while Cain's was an offering of self-sacrifice, or self-righteousness. I'm going to get it right, I promise. Self-righteousness. Notice a chapter later, a couple verses later, God is there talking with Cain, and he asks, where's your brother? And he says, I don't know. Am I my brother's keeper? Kind of lets you know about how far he's gotten away. I don't know if he just hasn't dealt with his guilt about it, or he just doesn't feel any remorse. If you killed your brother, do you think you'd be saying, am I my brother's keeper? But he doesn't even seem to feel guilt about it, does he? And then when God reveals to him that he knows what he's done, and he says, Abel's blood cries out from me, or cries out to me from the ground. Now, when David is confronted with his sin with Bathsheba and his murder of Uriah, her husband, David comes to that realization. He's been hiding, his real emotion, his real guilt. All that comes flooding on him in that moment. He knows what he's done is of great sin, that he sinned against her and her husband and against God, and he feels that. That's not the response of Cain. You notice what Cain's response is? Well, people are going to kill me. You're going to send me out to die. Where's the guilt, Cain? Where's the awareness of your great sin? See, he still is not willing to own up to his own sinful nature. To his own sinfulness. Reality is that Cain, when he brought his offering, was not really an offering of gratitude toward God, but it was an offering of self-righteousness. You think about how thankful are we for what God has done for us. We look around and we see all the things we've been blessed to have. How do we see those things? How do we view that? Do we view that as something I've accumulated? Something I've gained? Or do we view it as, God's allowed me to have it for now. I don't know how long I'll have it. He could take it away. But I'm thankful for what I have. When in 2 Timothy, Paul gives a list of all these great sinful behaviors and attitudes that are going to come in the last days. They're going to come against the church and even from within the church. And he goes through all these things. And right in the middle of that, he talks about You know, lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy. And he goes on and continues that list. But one of those great things one of those real sinful attitudes and behaviors they list there is the attitude of being unthankful. You know, I don't want to ever find myself in any of those lists in the Bible where it lists a bunch of sins. You know, none of us want to picture ourselves there. When you look at that list of things, some of those things are big, awful things that none of us would ever want to be a part of. But unthankful? Have I ever been unthankful? Sure. My life, I've been unthankful. I've had to change my attitude and realize, you know what? I've been greatly blessed. God's provided me with so much. Other people have provided me with so much. Are we thankful? In Cain's case, he's not thankful. He's one of those unthankful people. And because of his self-righteousness, he becomes jealous. You go back there, and the text tells us that after they give their sacrifices, and Abel's is accepted and his isn't, that he goes to talk with Abel. Now, God has told Cain, he said, you know, if you do well, will you not be accepted? Sure you will. Do better. Text goes on to tell us he goes and has a talk with Abel. We don't know what they talk about. But something's still lingering in the mind of Cain. He's still angry. He's so angry that later on he goes out in the field, he finds Abel, and he murders him. Brutally murders him. Why? John lets us know it's because he was jealous. 1 John chapter 3 and verse 12. John writes, not as Cain, who was of the wicked one and murdered his brother. And why did he murder him? Because his works were evil and his brother's righteous. You know, when we're confronted by our own sin, we have a couple options, don't we, of how we react. Number one, I could react and say, you know what? I messed up. I made some mistakes. I need to do some repenting. I need to change. And I can work toward that change. I could just simply deny it and walk away. Or I could become angry. Seen them all. Heard about them all. How would I react? How would you react? I don't want to be like Cain. I want to be someone who's thankful. When you think about your legacy and the kind of legacy you're leaving. You're leaving for your children, for the church, for Christians who will live long after us. And if we're lucky enough to be remembered by those people, will we be remembered for good things? Will we be remembered for a good Christian attitude? Will we be remembered for someone who looks to serve? To sacrifice, to love. Will we be remembered for someone who was Christ-like? What kind of sacrifice are you leaving? Is it one you're proud of, or is it one you'd like to change? Tonight, as you consider your own well-being spiritually, are you walking in a right relationship with God? You've got two men. One was accepted and the other was not. Why? Was it because of anything about them as a person? Or as as a value statement about them? No. God loved them both. He told Cain, he says, if you do well, you will be accepted. If you do well, if I do well, we will be accepted. Are you doing well? As a child of God, have you fallen away? Do you need to ask for forgiveness, to do some repenting in your life? If you're not a child of God, if you haven't obeyed the gospel and you don't have a relationship with God through the blood of Jesus Christ, then I encourage you to obey the gospel tonight to make things right with God. Whatever your need, please come as together we stand and sing.